Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Tuesday, October 5th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Stephen Humphreys.
And I'm April Austin.
On Saturday, Ludwig van Beethoven's new symphony will premiere in Bonn, Germany. Technically speaking, the German composer's 10th symphony is a co-write. His collaborator? A computer. Beethoven left behind fragmentary sketches for the follow-up to Symphony No. 9. Almost 200 years later, a team of musicologists and computer scientists have taught artificial intelligence how to predict which notes Beethoven might have chosen for the missing pieces. When you write your email or text, your computer or phone suggests to you what words you would write next, says team member Ahmed El-Gamel, director of the Arts and AI Lab at Rutgers University in New Brunswick, New Jersey. This kind of predictive model is very similar. The 18-month project was an iterative process. Computer programs learned to recognize patterns in Beethoven's creative process by examining his earlier symphonies. The AI also had to figure out which instruments to use for the arrangement, which will be performed by the Beethoven Orchestra Bonn. Mr. El-Gamel happily offers a preview by humming a few bars of the 25-minute piece. Side note, Schroeder, the pianist in the Peanuts comic strip, will finally have something new to play by his hero. The programmer knows that critics will question whether computers can replicate Beethoven's genius. Yet he believes there's plenty of joy in this ode to the beloved composer. It's basically a way to show the world what AI can do, says Mr. El-Gamel, who believes it's a tool akin to a creative assistant. It has a major role in the way art will be created in the future. Now, today's stories. Our first story. The president has a sweeping domestic agenda and the slimmest possible Democratic majority with which to try to pass it. The difficulty in getting that done has been on vivid display lately.
Any expectation that President Joe Biden could be the second coming of LBJ or FDR stops at a cold, hard fact. His congressional majorities are almost impossibly narrow. It's hard to be a truly transformational president with 0.0 extra votes in the Senate and virtually no extra votes in the House, says veteran Democratic Representative Brad Sherman of California. In today's 50-50 Senate, the Democratic majority comes only with the vice president's ability to break ties. In the House, it's a mere 220 to 212. Democrats' nominal control in Washington frees Republicans from responsibility to govern. That reality is seen most urgently in Congress's need to avert a catastrophic default on the national debt later this month. Should a default occur, it would be the latest crisis to befall the administration after missteps over the pandemic, the withdrawal from Afghanistan, and the southern border. The president's job approval sank below 50% in August, and it has stayed there since. But while Mr. Biden's first term may not look like LBJ's, Representative Sherman thinks he will ultimately get a good chunk of his domestic agenda passed. Biden is realistic about what to get and is strategic about how to get the most he can, he says. This story was reported by Linda Feldman and Dwight Weingarten in Washington for The Monitor.
Is there ever an odd time for progress? The symbolic victory embodied by Tunisia's naming of a woman as prime minister comes amid a deepening battle over the quality of the nation's democracy.
Before being named last week as prime minister of Tunisia, the first woman in the Arab world to hold such a position, Najla Ramthan was a university lecturer in geology and manager of World Bank-funded projects at Tunisia's Ministry of Higher Education. Yet rather than a celebration of breaking the glass ceiling, the academic's sudden rise to the prime minister's office has taken on new meaning in the Arab world's only democracy. Her appointment has illustrated Tunisia's uncertainty since President Kais Saied's assumption of emergency powers in late July, teetering between hope for positive change and fears of a disastrous backslide into authoritarianism. Polls show the populist president still has strong support, including for his suspension of the constitution. But frustration with the economy is building, and his political foes are joining forces. Right now, all that matters is whether you are with or against Kais Saied, and that is not good for Tunisia itself. The whole political process has become Saied-centered, says Ira Jarad, assistant professor of security studies at the Tunis-based South Mediterranean University. Even the first woman prime minister is being scrutinized because she took on the task from Saied in a not normal state of affairs. This story was reported by Taylor Luck in Amman, Jordan, and Ahmed Ayali in Tunis, Tunisia, for The Monitor.
Many white evangelicals think about their Christian identity as being explicitly tied to ideas of national identity. Preserving or strengthening a commitment to religion is a way to strengthen an overall identity, says a professor of modern Protestant theology.
After years of stagnation, the number of white evangelicals surged from 25% of the adult U.S. population in 2016 to 29% in 2020, according to a Pew Research survey. But this growth was fueled almost entirely by white supporters of former President Donald Trump, who began to embrace an evangelical identity after he was elected, and accounted for the subgroup's 6-point increase nationwide. Those who dropped the label, including the online movement of hashtag exvangelicals, accounted for only a 2-point decrease. We can't impute causality as to why the people who became evangelicals, Gregory Smith, associate director of research at Pew, told the Deseret News. But we can say, among Trump opponents, almost no one became evangelicals. Some evangelical leaders have decried the enthusiasm with which white evangelicals have embraced the former president, wondering if the term itself has already come to simply refer to the Republican Party's largest and most critical voting bloc. But others say the recent surge cannot be ascribed solely to party politics or the popularity of Mr. Trump. I think it's pivotal, no matter what your political affiliations are, not to approach this blindly, but to ask deep, resounding questions about morality and truth and justice, says Dr. Corne Becker, a theologian and pastor. This story was reported by Harry Brunius in New York for The Monitor.
Mention of the Daughters of the American Revolution may conjure up images of white members holding tea parties in Waspy, Connecticut. But the society has been expanding its diversity and, consequently, re-examining its perspective on history.
At a time when American history is deeply politicized, the Daughters of the American Revolution seem committed not only to expanding the country's understanding of those who participated in the Revolutionary War, but also to shedding the stereotype of being a white Anglo-Saxon organization. For decades after its founding in 1890, however, that stereotype seemed true. There was little, if any, acknowledgement that people of color could have ancestors who helped America achieve independence. Then, the first Black member of the modern DAR joined in 1977, and in 1984, the organization explicitly banned discrimination on the basis of race or creed after a Black applicant named Lena S. Ferguson was denied membership by a Washington, D.C. chapter. The group now has approximately 190,000 members, and the Black daughters say it's easy to find people who look like them at big DAR events. Furthermore, members' research keeps surfacing a diverse group of patriots. One woman is exploring potential patriots from Mexico, and new daughters from Louisiana's Cane River Creole community recently joined. According to DAR President Denise Doring Van Buren, the organization has two important jobs today: to continue honoring known patriots and to do a better job finding patriots of color and sharing their stories. This story was reported by Lindsay McGinnis for The Monitor.
A guest essayist shares her observations about how the great outdoors has the ability to surprise and delight.
If you want to be joyful, you need to be surprised often. To do this, you really need to go outside. Merv Brewster and her husband like to give themselves ample time to be surprised, so they spend a lot of time outside. They took off for Paradise Park on Mount Hood the other day. They sat down for lunch, expecting to be entertained by hawks riding the thermals at the mountaintop. They weren't expecting to have a front row seat to watch those thermals assemble lenticular clouds out of pure water and jazz right above their heads. Lenticular clouds are saucer-shaped drifts of perfection that form over large objects, such as mountains. From a distance, it looks as though the mountain put on a cap. But close up, the water in the cloud is constantly renewing itself and trailing away, the very illustration of ephemeral. Things do look different from a distance. This essay was written by Merv Brewster for The Monitor.
Now, commentary from The Monitor's editorial board on Taiwan and Biden's Democracy Summit. In a speech last month, China's new ambassador to the United States, Chen Gan, tried to make a case that his country, ruled by one party for 72 years, is a democracy. If that seems odd, consider the timing. In coming days, the Biden administration plans to send out invitations for a summit of well-established and emerging democracies. Taiwan, a thriving multi-party democracy for decades, is expected to be invited. In all likelihood, China will not. Simply by arranging the December 9th through 10th Summit for Democracy, President Joe Biden may have ignited a healthy competition between China and Taiwan to extol the virtues of their governing systems, even as Beijing increases its threats to take Taiwan by force. The mere possibility that Taiwan's elected president might speak at the summit could be one reason China has escalated the number of fighter jets flying near the island. China doesn't make a good case for being a democracy by threatening Taiwan. Yet, perhaps China should be invited to the summit as an observer. The world would benefit from a transparent debate over what is a democracy. The display of equality and freedom will be a good defense against China's display of fighter jets. That's a wrap for the news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Thanks for joining us. Tomorrow's fresh batch of stories includes a look at how a bottleneck of ships outside a port in California exemplifies worldwide supply chain problems. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how a woman turned wholeheartedly to God after being informed by doctors that she was terminally ill. Through prayer, her spiritual understanding deepened and she was completely healed. You can find the column in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. We want to give a quick thanks to our staff, including today's audio production team, Jeff Turton and Tomas Gonzalez.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor. Copyright 2021.